Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Strand. Strands are on the road covering this five-game Canucks road trip. I'm broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. 650. That's the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. Now joining us here on Canucks Talk, he is the voice of the Canucks on the station from Sportsnet 650. He's our pal, Brendan Batchelor. Batch, how's it going, man?
Good, guys. You're catching me while I'm out for a brisk afternoon walk, so if you hear any heavy breathing or coughing or wheezing in the background, just disregard.
Well, good for you for getting out and taking a walk out there, Batch, and we'll do our best to, I guess, ignore any heavy breathing that might crop up during the interview. another lost game in overtime, another game where they're up multiple goals, but Montreal also was played a pretty impressive game last night. What was your big takeaway from the performance from the Canucks?
Yeah, it's Rick Tocchet just must be so frustrated because this team shows a lot of good things and puts themselves in good situations with regularity. Like, you can look at the number of blown lead losses they have this year. I think it's probably up to 12 now or somewhere in that neighborhood. And the fact that they can't sustain the way that they want to play over 60 minutes, and in fact, you know, not only can't sustain it, but have oftentimes horrendous lapses where they let teams back into games, has to be infuriating for a coach that saw this team play so well, so consistently last year. So, you know, not that yesterday's game in isolation, in a vacuum, was a really bad performance from the Canucks. I actually liked most of what I saw from them. But ultimately, it's another one you can throw on the pile and say that's a game they probably should have won, but they let get away from them. And with all the loser points they're picking up in overtime, you just wonder whether the points missed at this time of the season in those sorts of tight games will loom large later in the year if they can't get things back on the rails and play with some more consistency.
And you make that point about, you know, how frustrated Rick Tocchet must be. I do think we're getting a sense of that a little bit when he speaks to the media, you know, after games, after practices, all of that. And one of the things that's really stood out to me, Batch, and, you know, obviously you're in the scrums with him and you're listening to the ones on the road, the availabilities. I think early in Tocchet's tenure and even through the end of last season, it seemed like once he had identified a problem that the team needed to correct, they corrected it pretty quickly. This year, it seems like we're hearing a lot of the same points of emphasis from Tocchet, right? Like, you got to hold on to the puck and make a play. That one stands out. How many times have we heard him emphasize that? And yet we keep seeing that same issue crop up time after time. And, you know, at a certain point, I don't know if it's the message is not getting through or it's just strictly a personnel issue or what it is, but it's been very striking to me how much this year he's had to hit the same points over and over again. And it doesn't seem like it's having an impact.
Yeah, and the one that stands out for me is the compounding of mistakes, which is something he talked about early on when he arrived as the head coach of the Canucks and took over after Bruce Boudreau, where, you know, he emphasized that it's okay to make one mistake, but the next guy can't make a mistake trying to cover up for your mistake, or you can't make a mistake trying to cover up for your own mistake, because that's where, you know, things fall apart for you. And I think we've seen a lot of compounding of mistakes for this group at times this year. So, you know, I don't think his message has changed, right? We've heard him bang the same drum. We got a pressure meets pressure in the post-game scrum last night, which was a bit of a throwback. It had been a while. But, you know, this is a coach that, you know, with the exception of coming into this season talking about wanting to create more off the rush, has been pretty consistent with his message of the non-negotiables that he needs from this group. And, you know, we could delve into the reasons why he's not getting them. I think, you know, not to give them an out or an excuse, but the number of injuries, the number of guys they've had out of the lineup, it's hard to talk about non-negotiables and situations like that when you're playing Noah Juulsen in a top four role, or Vinny Desjardins is playing 2 or 3 minutes more per game than ideally you would like him to. And you're, you know, in the four games that Quinn Hughes was out, Tyler Myers was playing north of 23 minutes a night. Like, those are not situations you want to put those guys in that you're forced to because of the injuries. So, you know, to a certain extent, some of that lack of execution or the compounding of mistakes probably has to do with guys being, you know, elevated into roles that they're not best suited for. But at the same time, even when this team has been relatively healthy, they've had some of these issues as well. So it's not just on those guys. And in fact, if you look at some of the Canucks' top players, those are the guys that really need to get going for them.
Batch, what's your concern meter at from a Canucks make the playoffs standpoint? Vegas has them at about 65%. Right, so they've actually fallen beneath a two-thirds chance. Dom's still in the 70s. Some of the other publicly available projection models have them sub 50% at this point. Where are you at with how you feel about this team's chances of playing postseason hockey for a second consecutive year?
Well, let's dust off the old Sportsnet 650 worryometer. Did we do that out of 10 back in the day, I think? So, I don't know. I'm probably still at like a 3 out of 10 on the concern level just because of the amount of adversity this team has faced and the fact that they continue to rack up points and continue to get results, even if it's in unconvincing and oftentimes frustrating fashion. I'm not at the point yet where I'm seriously concerned about it. Because, you know, they're going to get guys back into the lineup here. You would imagine that the organization will make some sort of move prior to the deadline, although we'll wait and see whether that's a big sort of groundswell kind of a move and an earth-shattering decision from the organization in terms of some of the rumors that have been out there of late, or whether it's sort of tweaking around the edges and complementing the core group that they have. But ultimately, I'm not concerned yet. If things go south this month, and I know this road trip is a really tough stretch in the schedule with the teams they have to face this week, with some of the health problems they're dealing with, they're not going to have Hronek. We'll see about Demko. We'll see about Pettersson. But, you know, ask me again in a week when they return back home after playing that final game of the trip against Winnipeg, and I might have a different answer for you, but I'm not there yet in terms of serious concern with this group right now.
What about if I were to frame it as their ability to contend this season? Where are you on the worryometer in terms of their ability to actually contend? And has that sort of confidence or curiosity, as it were, been dented by what we've seen over the course of the last 6 weeks, let's say?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In terms of contenders, it has been dented quite a bit just because we haven't really seen them, save for a couple of exceptions, reach the heights that they did so consistently last year. And I know I've heard you talk about this, and I've made this point as well, is the more concerning part of that is that the floor is not as high as it was from last year. So on most nights with the Canucks last season, and, you know, we don't want to get into always talking about last year, but at the same time, this is an organization that talked about raising the bar from the way they played last year. And in fact, they've taken a bit of a step back. And, you know, as Patrick Alvin put it, you know, there's sort of a glass half empty feeling as we approach the halfway mark of the season. You know, I don't see them as contenders at this moment. Now, do they have the time and the ability to get back to playing the way that they did? Absolutely, they do. There's more than half the season left. If they could get some guys back in the lineup, if they can start playing the way that we saw them play last year in terms of their defensive structure, if they can find more ways to create offense, if they can do what they talked about doing coming into the season and try and produce more off the rush, then, you know, I can be convinced again. But right now, even if this team is a playoff team, we're talking about them as a wild card club. And in that scenario, if you're stacking them up against a Vegas or a Winnipeg in the first round of the playoffs, I wouldn't like their chances in that sort of matchup. So they've got a lot of work to do to convince me, and I'm sure convince many people that follow this team, that they are in fact contenders this year.
Yeah, it's the offensive side of things. I mean, I think you're right to point out that the defensive floor hasn't been as high either, and that was their bread and butter. But, you know, we all came into this season talking so much about, can they do more off the rush? Can they be a more dangerous offensive team? And I think it's very fair to point to just the number of absences they've had. That's part of the reason they haven't been able to grow in that area. But it just looks really, really rough right now. And, you know, Drance made the point earlier in the show, they're not even spending as much time in the offensive zone because they're having trouble getting the puck there as they were last year. Like, even in games last year where they struggled to rack up shots, they had the puck in the offensive zone a lot. It was just that final step. This year, it's not even really that recently, and it's getting hard for me to see the path to getting back to where they were last year offensively and then taking those next couple of steps by the time the playoffs roll around. But what stands out to you, Batch, about the offensive struggles? Where is it going wrong on that side for the Canucks right now?
Well, they're not a dangerous team off the rush, really, at all. You know, I know Lekkomäki scored a nice goal, and that's part of the reason why they have him up in the lineup, is to generate in those sorts of situations. But, you know, in part because of some of their defensive struggles, I think one thing that a lot of people in the market correctly diagnosed was that moving the puck up the ice was going to be a struggle for that defensive core, which is going to hamstring your team's ability to create off the rush when you can't get the puck up the ice and you can't get through the neutral zone with speed and attack that way. So, you know, as much as you're right, there have been some offensive issues here. I think at the end of the day, a lot of this comes back to the defense, where if they were getting the puck up the ice, if this was a team that could attack with speed, then they would have much more ability to create off the rush. And then, quite simply, the Canucks' best players have to be game changers at a higher level than they have been. And I know JT Miller had a good game last night, but those have been too few and far between. And we all know about Elias Pettersson's struggles for the first half of the year. And, you know, Patrick Alvin's comment that, you know, those guys need to be better is absolutely correct. And, you know, luckily for the Canucks, they've gotten some really good secondary scoring from guys like Sherwood and Suter. But even then, I think, you know, some of the injuries are causing those guys to be played in situations that aren't ideal for them. And we saw sort of the byproduct of that when Suter's line got caved in as much as they did last night. He's ideally a third line center playing in a second line center role. He scored a lot of his goals early in the year when he was playing either further down the lineup or playing wing on the top line, where there's less onus on him to drive play when he's riding shotgun with Miller instead of centering the line himself. So, you know, they've had some secondary scoring, but, you know, the injuries affect that, and that puts that much more pressure on the top guys that are in your lineup to get the job done. So you've got to look to the Millers, the DeBrusques, the Bessers, the Pettersons when he gets back, and say that those guys need to elevate their game to another level in order for this team to be more offensively potent. You know, on top of the fact that we could talk about, and you know, I've heard people sort of referencing the late Travis Green era, where it felt like a lot of low to high and trying to get shots through, and you know, that can be very effective when you have guys on the blue line like Quinn Hughes who are capable of changing the angle and walking the line and you know creating shot opportunities for themselves that wouldn't obviously be there. But with the personnel they've got on the backhand right now, not enough of those shots are getting through. And as a result, they're not creating enough offense.
One point of concern that's cropped up a few times this season from fans, Batch, has been, you know, a Canucks player taking a big hit, whether it's clean or not, and then no response from the team afterwards. And that's another one that comes up last night after Lekkomäki gets crunched, clean hit, right? Has his head down. So, you know, there's a learning experience for him, but, you know, it's a rookie taking a big hit. No response, no physical response, at least, from the team after. And I know Rick Tocchet was asked about it last night and said, you know, you just have to make, it's not about going to drop the gloves and fight a guy, but you just have to make sure whatever you're doing next, you do it hard. Is there any reason to concern about this for you? Does it say anything about the team, or is it just a case of, look, you just got to go out and punish them in other ways when a hit like that happens?
I think the only thing that I read into it is that they don't have that guy that is the guy that is going to go and, you know, make opponents accountable for laying those sorts of hits, right? And I was listening to the morning show this morning, and the guys were talking about a game last year. I think it was against Chicago, where Zadorov stood up for Pettersson.
Yep.
And Pettersson talked after the game and said he didn't have to do that, but I appreciate that he did. They don't have that guy. And, you know, I'm not going to relitigate the Zadorov situation and whether they should have brought him back or not. But that kind of presence, that kind of I'm the sheriff around here and I'm going to keep everybody in line so that you're not touching our star players, they don't have that player on their roster. So, you know, is that something they need? I guess it's debatable. Like, this conversation crops up, you know, two or three times a year when a top-end player on the Canucks is you know, hit, whether clean or not, and sometimes we see a response and sometimes we don't. I don't want to read anything into it in terms of, like, lack of team unity or anything like that, but that is a presence that they had last year that at times they have lacked in the last few years, and I think they lack that kind of player right now in terms of someone that's going to, you know, play that enforcer role on the roster. I guess there are guys that could do it, like I think about Dakota Joshua, obviously not in the lineup last night. Vinny Desharnais, I think, has the ability to be that kind of guy, but we haven't seen that from him to this point. So, yeah, other than that, I don't want to make any sort of grand sweeping proclamations about lack of team toughness or anything like that.
Yeah, in the moment, I'm gonna give this away. But me and Ian McIntyre had an argument about whether or not there should have been a response on that shift. And I was the one who was saying I would have liked to see someone at least, like, you know, go grab the neck opening of his jersey, like, whether you fight or not, just, like, go send him a message and then take a number for later. And I did think that JT Miller got one back on them when he took a pretty significant run at Lane Hutson later on in the period. So I wouldn't call it. I don't know that I'd have called it like a real lack of response from the group. I actually think they did elevate and go after a couple young players sort of in response to that hit, ultimately, at least in the context of the game last night. And I was someone who at first blush was like, man, you can't get dummied by the fourth line on the opening shift of the game, let your 19-year-old rookie get crushed and then give up a goal and not have any response to that.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to look at it. Like, honestly, in the moment, I didn't even think about that. And, you know, it didn't even sort of come into my thought process at all until I heard Ian ask Rick talking about it after the game. And my reaction would have been very similar to his, which is like, oh, yeah, I guess maybe it would have been nice, but also it's not a big deal. And we ended up taking the lead. So it is what it is. Like, ultimately, that's where I fall on it, especially like, clean hit, open ice. You know, it wasn't the worst hit I've ever seen. Like, I didn't think it was like taking liberties or anything like that. I would more say that that's maybe a young player with not enough experience in the league needing to understand his surroundings and have more awareness on the ice. But yeah, you know, I agree there was a bit of pushback from the Miller side of things. But yeah, you know, I don't know. I think these conversations are almost always overblown, even when they're in more severe situations than this, like that the Mike Matheson-Pettersson exchange in Florida many years back, where there was like a summit on the Canucks' lack of team toughness and lack of response in game. I don't think this deserves that.
Credit to our Sportsnet colleagues, by the way, both Mac and Eric Engels, last night in the press box. Going into the third period, Mac said, the Canucks are going to surrender the lead within the first 3 minutes of the period, and then the Canadians will lead by the 13-minute mark. And he was like dead on to a spooky degree. At which point, Eric Engels walked over and said, is it just me or is Jake DeBrusque even playing tonight? And I said, that's sometimes how it is with him. You'll notice him when he scores. And Engels said, you're right. Because I brought it up, he's for sure scoring. And as Engels was saying the sentence, Montreal took the penalty. Like, Caulfield took the penalty. DeBrusque scored seconds later. So between Engels and Mac, there was some serious Nostradamus vibes in the Montreal press box last night from our Sportsnet colleagues.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned DeBrusque. I went on our sister station, Sportsnet 960 in Calgary this morning, And amongst like a million questions about Miller and Pettersson and do they hate each other and is this going to ruin the Canucks season, they asked me about Jake DeBrusque, but they put it within the context of like, this guy's been such a great find for, like, wow, look at the goal production. He's been unreal. And I was like, well, yeah, I guess. Like he scored a lot of goals. But at the same time, his line got totally caved in last night, and he's gone long stretches of this year without scoring. So that I sort of gave a middling answer, which I think surprised them, which is like, yeah, he's produced a lot. He's benefited from being on the power play at the net front, and he scored a bunch of goals in that situation. But in terms of his overall play, I think there's still lots of room for improvement there. And, you know, Eric pointing out that he was relatively quiet in that game last night, outside of scoring that goal on the power play, is just sort of another reflection of that.
Well, it is funny. You pull up Hockey DB, and he's on pace for career high goals, career high points, right? So if you're not,
yeah,
if you're
like
not
35,
watching
36 goals, yeah, he's on pace for.
If you're not watching, yeah, every game, you're like, wow, this guy is finding another level in Vancouver. And then the conversation here has been like wildly vacillated from this is the worst signing ever to like, oh my gosh, he's on fire, and then he's invisible, right? It's just, it's one of those things where you're following every game. It just feels a lot different. Batch, before we let you go, Mancunian Mike texts in, hey, mate,
oh, no,
please ask Batch what his reaction was when Harry Maguire ballooned that shot over the bar last second yesterday.
Head in hands. Could it have been anyone else on the planet with that chance in front? An absolute sitter. And of course it was the big lad Harry Maguire, who I thought actually played a really good game and was very crucial for them in that 2-2 draw against league leaders Liverpool at the weekend. But yeah, I would have taken that chance over him, I think. So, you know, hopefully we get someone else in the box next time when there's a big opportunity like that.
Batch, you're the best, man. Appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your walk.
Sounds good. Thanks, boys.
That is Brendan Batchelor, voice of the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650. And yeah, Batch is 100% right that this lack of response question crops up on a semi-regular basis, right? Especially if the team is not winning games at the clip that that fans want to see them win games at. It's kind of an easy talking point there. I was kind of thinking about it because generally I'm on the side of Batch, right? Where it's like, well, it doesn't really matter. Just, you don't, like, you, it's so easy to get distracted and caught up by trying to act tough in those situations that sometimes it actually, I think, takes a team's focus away. But I do think, you know, especially if it starts to become like a reputation you have or something like that, or if it's a repeated pattern, there's something to be said for, as you said, it doesn't have to be the biggest response ever, but in a scrum, grab the guy's jersey, do whatever, have a talk to him, do something in those circumstances just to try to galvanize the team a little bit.
Yeah, I just because it's a hit, it was a totally clean hit, by the mm-hmm. way, but just because it's a hit on your 20-year-old rookie, I'd like to see. Now, it's also the end of a shift, and the shift had not gone well, so I get that players wanted to get off, but I'd like to see someone just you know, go cross-check, a little grab, just like some message sent, and then everything after that, though, I thought was exactly what you want to see, including the run that Miller took at Hudson, where it's like, okay, I'm going after your rookie then. I actually thought the Canucks' response was appropriate as the period unfolded, but in the moment, I'd have liked to see just like a quick, we're not going to get bullied sign from the club. And whatever, that's at this point, we're talking very minor quibbles. Mm-hmm. In the moment, I didn't love it. By the end of the first period, I thought their response was appropriate.
And it's one of those things as well. Of course, if they end up winning that game, right, it's not anywhere near as high on the topics of conversation as it was this morning, because everything seems like more dire like that, right, when you end up losing the game. Okay,
well,
go ahead.
And because that first shift, that first 68 seconds of the game in which, you know, they have a heavy shift right off the hop, the Habs do.
Yep.
They land the big hit. There is no response. Then they score the first goal. In retrospect, because they come back and win and because they outplay the Canucks, feels like they set the tone early. You know what I mean? Even mm-hmm. though they end up falling behind 3-1. So I think that's also why it takes on, as a result of the results, a different sort of level of magnitude.
All right, we'll take a break here. Final hour of the show coming up. We still haven't really talked too much about JT Miller, and he was a standout last night with 4 points. So we'll get into his performance and what it says about where his game is trending next in the next segment. We'll also talk to Sarah Nurse, forward of the Toronto Scepters, coming up at 1:30, or at least in the 1:30 segment. Of course, the PWHL Takeover Tour is at Rogers Arena tomorrow, January 8th. So lots coming up. You can send your text in as well, 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. More Canucks talk on the way here on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Canucks probably traveling right now between Montreal and Washington. They practiced in Montreal earlier today. They'll play Washington tomorrow in D.C. And, you know, as we continue to look back at the 5-4 overtime loss from last night, Drance, we mentioned him a couple of times, but even in the loss, a big storyline coming out of that game is JT Miller, who has pretty clearly his best game of the season. 2 goals, 2 assists, obviously in on all 4 goals. And I really felt like we got pretty much a total package JT Miller game. You mentioned, you know, the hit he puts on Hudson later in that period after Lekkomäki takes the big hit. Territorially, his line had by far the most success of any of the Canucks forward groups against a Montreal team that was mostly all over the puck. And then it's the production as well. Gets 2 goals against a goalie, which he hadn't done in a long time. And even beyond the points, you know, what stood out to me was none of them were really cheap. You know, that shot on the Höglander assist, that's a fantastic shot, makes a great play from his own zone, from below the goal line in his own zone to spring Besser, and then Besser sets up Lekkomäki for the rush. And then the one I loved the most was the power play assist to DeBrusk, right? Like that element of swagger, that power play artistry from JT Miller, that's what he's capable of when he's at the top of his game. And we've seen it in moments this year, but not really consistently. And it just changes. We talk about, you know, Quinn Hughes being in the lineup and Elias Pettersson being near the top of his game, but you know, let's not forget how big an impact JT Miller at the top of his game, doing, you know, firing on all cylinders, contributing in every way he's capable of. Let's not forget how big an impact that can have for this team as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think Miller has played his best hockey since Christmas. Honestly, I think the last 5 games, and I just think there's been so much noise. I think there have been a couple of loud, I don't even want to call them mistakes, but loud highlights. You know, there was the game where he finished 12th among all Canucks forwards in ice time. So there's been a lot of like sideshow discussion that in some ways I think obscured the extent to which Miller's two-way game has been coming on. He's been on a pretty serious run of productivity from an assists perspective. Last night the goals came, and you're right. Like this was a player with the game on a string, which is especially impressive given the overall environment of the contest, which was slanted against the Canucks. Like Miller found a way to produce offense and actually play most of the game, although I think tailed off a little bit in the third period, in the Habs end of the rink. Like certainly through the first 40 minutes, Miller's minutes were minutes the Canucks were winning. There were no other minutes they were reliably winning.
Yep.
And so, you know, I think there's a level to which a game like this was inevitable because I think he's been rounding into form. I think he's been playing his best hockey across the last 5 games. And that's a good sign. It's not like sufficient, right? It needs to be sustained, but you know, look, as much as we criticize or talk about Miller's production or lack thereof or the lengthy streak without a goal and on, you know, I'm sure it was affecting his confidence. And clearly this is a player who's been going through it on a variety of fronts this season. You know, Miller's off seasons, right? And he's one on, one off. You know, in those on seasons, he's like one of the 10 or 15 most impactful forwards in the game. And in these off seasons, the way he's performed this year, he's still one of the top 60. You know, like it's not like his fall off makes him like a second liner. You know, he's still a top of the lineup piece and a credible one. And he's been that for the Canucks this year. It's just that this is a star-driven league now.
Yes.
Like, this is a star-driven league, and the parallel paths of evaluation, the notion of this Canucks team as a contender, requires Miller to be on, requires Miller to be taking over games. And we just haven't seen that frequently enough, frankly, for the Canucks to keep pace with the Vegases and the Edmontons of the world, but we certainly did see it last night. And it's pretty disappointing that the team wasn't able to turn that into a big road win to start this road trip off on the right foot.
Yeah, and I mean, one way you could look at it is they got outplayed as a team, but Miller helps them get a point, right? Because he did have that type of performance. And I think calling it a star-driven league is really important. And as much as we can look and talk about the deficiencies at the bottom end of the Canucks roster, you know, the bottom defense pairing and things like that, and that's all fair. Obviously, their blue line needs major changes. I don't think we can completely write off, you know, the offensive struggles of Elias Pettersson or JT Miller up to this point, you know, not counting last night. Obviously, we'll see if he turns a corner here, just because of the blue line. You know what I mean? Like, yes, it's true that offense would be a lot easier to come by for the Canucks if they had more talented defenders who could get these guys the pucks. But it's also true that at a certain point, you know, the burden and responsibility for producing offense, at least some of it, lands with the forwards as well, right? So, yeah, I think it's fair to point to the puck moving issue. And if you're trying to get to the absolute ceiling of this team and be a legitimate Stanley Cup contender, that's really important. They're going to have to address that. They're going to have to figure that out. But it's not just kind of a blanket excuse. Well, and you know, to say, well, that's why their top forwards aren't producing. They bear responsibility for it as well. And last night was a reminder. It wasn't as if that was a stellar game moving the puck for the Canucks blue line, but JT Miller was able to have that type of game-breaking impact. He needs to have that more often. And when Elias Pettersson is back, he needs to have it a lot more often than we've seen. Then you also have to fix the other stuff. But we've spent so much time talking about the blue line, right, and how it affects the rest of the team. But they got to take care of their business as well.
Yeah. No, you're right. The star-driven thing, too, I think can't be understated as a factor to monitor here over the next 10 games, right? Like, from the perspective of what we're heading to in the stakes of the next 2 weeks, right? The Canucks have this difficult stretch, and their key engine, right, looked encumbered, looked, you know, limited's the wrong word to ever use for Quinn Hughes, so I don't want to say it, but he encumbered. He looked bothered by the injury. In a way, maybe that I don't know if I was ready for it, Jamie, to be totally honest with you. Because I'm used to Quinn Hughes being superhuman.
We just so rarely see him at anything less than his absolute peak, right? Like, it's yeah. We're so used to seeing the very, very best of Quinn Hughes.
And he's legitimately playing a different sport than anyone else at his position. You know, like, I've reached this level with Quinn Hughes where I'm shocked when I'm not shocked. Right, but I'm shocked when my jaw isn't on the ground watching him play throughout the entire night. And last night, you know, he looked like a really good top pair defenseman, as opposed to this, you know, metronome, this like human metronome that just completely controls the game and where it's played and how it's played whenever he's on the ice. And this now becomes whether Pettersson's back. It's Tuesday now. On Wednesday in Washington, D.C. or not, right? Whether Pettersson's back on Wednesday or not, if Hughes is at 70% or 60% of you know, where he's been throughout this season, like, that's tying two arms behind this team's back. That's as significant as just not having Hronek outright. And honestly, not having Hronek outright has, I think, been more impactful than most would have expected.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, the extent to which Hronek's been missed, I honestly think dwarfs the extent to which Pettersson's been missed and maybe dwarfs the extent to which Miller's been missed, which I do think says more about the replacement, right? Like, the replacement gap for Hronek's minutes, I think, is just steeper than it is for Miller or Pettersson, especially because they haven't both missed time
at the same moment. Like, I think that would compound and become more costly. But, you know, if Hughes isn't himself, and not just not himself, this version that we've seen from him over the last 150 games of his NHL career, where he's, you know, if not in the McDavid, Kucherov, Kaprizov tier, then he's knocking on the door loudly. And like, let that guy in. He's been knocking on the door.
Why is he really hammering loudly on the door? What's going on?
Yeah. Like, will someone get that? truly, like, if he's not that guy, then this next week of games gets that much more dicey for me.
Yeah, and the theory of this team, as much as Rutherford and Alvin have done really good work to kind of change the depth and you know, build out the depth so much more than it was under the previous regime, we've emphasized this over and over again, right? It still does come back to Pettersson, Hughes, Miller, Demko, and you have multiple stars on a team because, yeah, you hope they're clicking all at once, especially in the playoffs, and that's how you find that ultimate ceiling and become a legitimate contender. But you also have it so they can kind of overlap, certainly during the course of the regular season. You know, so if one or two is clicking, one or two aren't, well, then you still have two stars clicking and you're still in a really strong position in the regular season. And just for so much of this season, really all of this season, it's only been Quinn Hughes clicking. Now, because he's more than just a regular star, that's been enough for the Canucks to hang right there in the playoff race. But you're right. It's one thing to have him back. We saw what it looked like with him out of the lineup. But even just have him playing at like a star defenseman level as opposed to Norris Trophy, one of the five best players in the world level, that's a huge, huge gap. And if that's the case, then, man, it becomes even more important that whoever is in the lineup of Miller, Pettersson, and Demko are able to find something close to their star levels on a regular basis for this team. Because otherwise you're talking about trying to grind out points where you have no star level contributors. And that is, in this day and age in the NHL, that is very, very, very difficult to do.
Yeah, and look, the next two, okay? We'll talk about this more tomorrow.
Yep.
But the next two in particular, I think, are going to be fascinating because the Caps and the Carolina Hurricanes have one vital component in common. What do you think it is? What
blue
do you
think lines. I'm gonna say? Blue lines.
Blue lines. Complete blue lines.
Yeah.
Like complete 1 through 6. You love the composition of it. It makes sense. They work well together. There aren't really holes, although Brent Burns beginning to show some wear and tear, which like I honestly, you'd have to look up his age, but I'm sure he's 40. Makes sense. Like, there aren't holes on these back ends. And that is in sharp contrast with what the Canucks are dealing with, especially if Hughes is, it looks like he did in Montreal on Monday, which is, again, still great, just not Quinn Hughes levels of, like, you know, throws thunderbolts at mortals from the top of his mountain. And so what happens when you have a team with a flawed blue line like the Canucks against teams with complete blue lines, like enviable blue line depth? I think you get a dynamic where the Canucks are going to have to take their chances because these other two teams are very likely to dictate pace, are very likely to dictate where and how the game is played.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be able to control it. And so, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean you can't win, but it does mean things like winning the special teams battle, making sure you get great goaltending, and taking your chances becomes paramount, because I don't think we'll be surprised if we come out of the games on Wednesday and Friday and are talking about a Canucks team that, you know, for example, gets outshot something like 40-25 across the next two games, which isn't to say they'll lose both of them, right? But it's just that, like, that's my expectation. For this week, is the Canucks are going to have to really be sturdy in their defensive end, and they're probably going to have a fairly difficult time establishing that good OZP that they need here. And that contrast on the back end, I think, is going to be very sharp. Like, it'll be in sharp relief as we watch these games unfold. At least I expect it to be. Over the course of the next 72 hours here.
It's tough too, because I feel like they just keep getting, this whole year they've been stuck between wanting to play a certain way, or at least wanting to try to play a certain way, and the demands of the who they're missing off the roster, and now where they are in the standings, where they don't really have the luxury to try to develop that, and it would be difficult to do so even if you did, right? Missing Hronek, missing potentially Elias Pettersson, Dakota Joshua is out again from your lineup. So they're kind of in this spot where, okay, we have to figure out a way, as you said, maybe it's, you know, we're playing lockdown defense as much as we can, soaking up offensive zone time against, and then we try to counterattack, or we try to win on the special teams battle, whatever they can do, the game plan that makes sense to maximize their chance to pick up 2 points. But that's not the game plan they wanted to have coming into the season. That's not the game plan they want to have if they go to the playoffs, going into the playoffs. And just the more time of the regular season you spend not working on that, the harder it is to eventually develop that. And we're almost halfway. We are halfway through the season essentially here. So you talked about the concern level with Batch earlier. And I think that's the biggest point of concern for me is, even if everyone gets healthy, even if they go out and make a trade for a defenseman that helps them move the puck, do they have the runway to kind of build that new identity on top of it, even if things start to go much more in their favor than they have so far right. this season? And I think, like, I don't know if we're out of runway yet for that, right? Can you change an identity of a team from this point to the playoffs? Yeah, I think you can. But I also think the magnitude of the task is a lot more significant now than it would have been if they had been, you know, all healthy to start the season and kind of had the start they wanted.
Yeah, the worst part about it, Jamie, for me anyway, is that they kind of did have the start they wanted, more or less, right? I mean, through the first 16 games, I think we were feeling pretty optimistic about where this team was trending,
mm-hmm.
Especially because really it was like the defensive play that had fallen off. And you know, I think we have a fairly, like, we have a higher degree of confidence about this team to get about this team's ability to get its house in order defensively than we do about their ability to generate at the sort of clip you need to win in the contemporary NHL in the playoffs, right? I mean, that's the thing we haven't seen this side do reliably, certainly not under this head coach. So, you know, look, it's a tall order, and yet, you know, I'm like, I think we're still probably one significant injury away, but it does kind of feel like we're getting close to season from hell territory. You know, and my football analogy for this would be obviously the San Francisco 49ers, right? Where it's like, even like 4 or 5 weeks ago, people were like, well, they'll probably still be able to figure it out. That division's wide open, you know? And then it's just like one too many, right? You just take one too many. And you think about the conversation this season, it's like early in the year, they were playing decently well offensively. They certainly were showing signs of significant improvement, a serious uptick in terms of their ability to generate off the rush. And yet, you know, they were allowing these goals, there were defensive breakdowns, and it was like, well, wait till they get Demko back. And, you know, I mean, even before that, right, and Dakota Joshua, they don't even have Joshua and Demko. And then you get the Janot hit, right? And then you get the Miller leave. And then, you know, you have sort of Demko finally returns, but it's not Demko yet. And Joshua returns, but it takes him a while to grind into form. And by the time he does, he gets hurt again. And then obviously Pettersson and Hughes get hurt. And then we're kind of where we're at now. And I still feel like you're one away from being the official, like, season from hell team in the league. But, you know, and I don't want to downplay, like, how significant other teams' absences have been. The Canucks will play the Maple Leafs on Saturday night. And we have no idea if Matthews will be in the lineup, and he's kind of their Hughes analog. And we have no idea if, and they've been without their starting goaltender for a significant portion of this season, certainly for the last few weeks, and they won't have him on Saturday. And the Kings have done what they have without a single game from Drew Doughty, you know? So I don't want to say that, like, the Canucks are unique. They're probably another injury away from that. Teams like the Avs too have been, like, seriously hit. The Florida Panthers played weeks without Barkov and Tkachuk. So I don't know that they're the season from hell team yet, but we can see that sort of goal line from here. And you know, when you are that team, I think it just, like, as the absences pile up, sort of your structural integrity gets slowly compromised. And then you still think, like, well, they'll have time to get it together. They'll have time to get it together. And then suddenly they're,
you're at the stretch where it really matters, where it's the game you need to win. And it's like, they have not got it together. You know, like it comes fast. It comes fast and it sneaks up on you a bit. And I still think that the teams behind the Canucks have, I don't know that they have enough juice to make it matter. I think the Canucks have more spent their margin for error than really put themselves in crisis mode. But, you know, as games like last night's pile up, where not only did the Canucks fail to win, but they squander an opportunity where they really should win, given their late lead. And, you know, they kind of look like the second best team on the ice doing it. As that evidence piles up, it becomes really hard for us. And in fact, I don't think we can ignore it as we try and think through what's next, what's coming sort of on the other side of the hill for this club.
I think the season in hell argument for the Canucks right now rests on just the varied and overlapping nature of the absences. You know what I mean? Where it's been, it wasn't like there was like, oh man, three like injuries in the course of play early in October, and they were all, you know, one guy was out for 6 weeks, one guy was out for 8 weeks, but then they came back. You know, it was really tough there, but then they all came back. It's been starting from training camp with the Popliteus and Thatcher Demko, Dakota Joshua and cancer, right? And then Brock Besser with a concussion. The you know, Derek Forbort's father dies and he has to leave the team. Then he's injured. Yeah. Then JT Miller takes a personal leave of absence. Then Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson are out. Like, there's just never been, it feels like there hasn't been a 3 week stretch where, not even that everyone's been healthy together, but nothing new has been added. You know what I mean? Right. As soon as it's on the horizon, like, uh-oh, they're getting back, they're getting healthy. Well, now Philip Hronek's out just before Thatcher Demko comes back. So it's just that kind of, it's like on the treadmill where every time it feels like the team is getting healthy, something else crops up. That to me is, if you were going to make the argument that they've been kind of the team suffering the season from hell this year in the NHL, that's the argument to make.
Well, and then as the team runs out of runway, right? And we talked about this a little bit a couple weeks ago, but I do think it's worth reiterating, because we've been factoring in the Canucks getting players back, right? Into why they should be able to outlast these teams. But one thing we haven't factored in is, you know, if this team's positioned, like, say they just run in place with teams like Utah and Calgary and St. Louis between now and the trade deadline, right? Is there a possibility of subtraction from this roster, right? Given that they sort of wouldn't be necessarily, like, for sure having punched their way into the playoffs, and there are a variety of contractual situations looming, whether it's a Pew Suter, whether it's a Derek Forbort, whether it's a Brock Besser on the high end, right? Like, do those conversations become a little bit more pressing? Do those decisions become things that Canucks management has to look at as, hey, we can't keep these guys as own rentals right now. That would be irresponsible. We need to make sure we are getting assets and maximizing our weaponry to improve this team this offseason to take another couple runs at this while we've got Quinn Hughes under contract. So, you know, that there's well within now, like, sort of the fat part of the bell curve, as much as I still think this team is more likely to figure it out than not, there's also a downside case in which this team actually subtracts from the roster between now and the end of the season.
It's an interesting point, and especially when you have Patrick Alvin in interviews. Yeah, the Elias Pettersson stuff got the headlines, but he was also saying, you know, I'm kind of glass half empty on this season. That doesn't sound like a general manager who's desperate to add to his team. Yeah, right? So, like, hey, yeah, I want to go out and trade a first-round pick to bring in a stud defenseman for this team. As you said, I mean, part of, yes, this management team is very aggressive, but that can swing the other way. That doesn't always just mean adding, right? Sometimes that means looking at your situation and thinking, you know what, we don't have it this year, so we're going to be aggressive the other way and maybe make some unexpected selling moves that people didn't see coming. So I do think you're right to kind of point out, as we're 2 months out from the trade deadline now, and we're all saying, I came into this season saying, you know what, they'll add the defenseman eventually. That's what they do. They'll find their target. They'll figure it out. I'm much less confident of that now. One, because of how the market has developed. Two, because how this team is playing. And therefore, the other side of the coin should be on the table. The possibility exists that they'll say, you know what, this just isn't our year, so we're going to do something else, or we're going to make some other types of moves at the trade deadline. Now, somebody texted in, and we'll get into it on the other side as well as some other talking points. But Liam, the F1 guy, says, am I wrong to say that the rest of this road trip will be a season-deciding trip? So we'll let that question marinate. We'll take a break. Final segment, we can get into that. Maybe we'll hear from Rick Tocchet, and we've got an interview to play with Sarah Nurse as well. So that's all in the final segment here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here. Final segment of the show live from the Kintech Studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. And to the Dunbar Lumber text line, as mentioned just before we went to break, Liam the F1 guy texts in, am I wrong to say that the rest of this road trip will be a season deciding trip? And my gut answer is you are wrong to say that, Liam, just because it's only four games remaining. So even if you lose all four in regulation, does that decide your season? Not necessarily. Now, there's always caveats to this. What?
That's a big oof if you lose all
four. It sure is. And I do think, to kind of argue against my own position there, I think the fact that it's four teams, what, all in top 10 in the NHL standings, that cuts both ways, because on the one hand, it's tough competition. So it's like, well, road trip against tough competition, you know, those are tough games to win. But it also feeds into the idea of, well, if you're not hanging with those teams, are you really contenders? And if you're not really contenders, I mean, I think that's what Liam's getting at here, right? Not that they're going to literally be out of a playoff, like not that it will be impossible to come back from a playoff spot if this trip goes south, but just, will we kind of once and for all decide what this team is if they don't measure up to this run of opponents? And I guess if, you know, by that definition, you could say this has a season deciding air to it. I do think the month of January is kind of the season is on the line in the month of January. And we talked about the schedule even beyond this trip. But the other part of it is because of the Four Nations break in February, between the end of January and the trade deadline in March, you only play 10 games. So if you stumble significantly in January and maybe your playoff chances are in real jeopardy, right? You're outside the playoff bar. You've got work to do. You have to hop over teams by the end of January. You've only got 10 games between that point and the trade deadline to change the impression of your team. And that's when the conversation we were just having, right? Well, what does management decide to do? Do they decide to sell guys off? That's where it starts to become very real. So I'm not quite ready to say season on the line in these next four games, although there are some scenarios where, as you said, it's a big oof and things can go really poorly and they can dig themselves a hole. But if you zoom out just a little bit more and look at the schedule to the end of January, yeah, it's very, very high stakes for this team.
Oh, without question, it's very high stakes. I just think four games remaining or five games total, I do think it's too short a period of time. Now, that said, extreme outcomes,
yes,
change that equation, right? I mean, if we're talking, you know, if they don't have a regulation win on this trip, or in fact, even worse, if they have all regulation losses, then yeah, that becomes a crisis of a pretty significant magnitude. No team can really survive. No team that has no cushion can really survive that kind of stretch. And mm-hmm. One thing that the Canucks have actually done pretty well is they have managed their losses just about perfectly, right? I mean, this team has, when they've this team has 14 regulation wins on the season, Jamie.
Yep.
Right. It's not a huge haul of unqualified successful results, but they're, you know, mostly fine in context, largely because, hey, they might not be winning a ton of games, but they're not losing them in the sort of way that actually does damage to you, right? They're losing a lot of these games, even last night's game, even the, what was the other one recently? Was it the Flames? The Flames beat them in regulation, mm-hmm. but the
Well, the Kraken won
in overtime.
They won in the shootout against Seattle, but they lost the other one where they blew the big lead against the Kraken in overtime.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But my point being, when they're losing these leads, they're losing and then losing them in overtime. They're not giving it up in regulation. It's not like the Habs scored some backbreaker that kept the Canucks off the board entirely. In fact, you know, the Canucks had a game in hand and they were 1 point clear of the Flames, and they actually extend their lead over Calgary with the result last night while spending that game in hand. That's not a disastrous outcome, even though it feels like evidence of the glass half empty thing, as Alvin would put it. So, you know, I think this Canucks team is still positioned well going into this road trip, and provided that they can do, you know, something like 3 points in the next four, right? 3 points in the next four. Look, that would mean that since Christmas, you'd be 2 points shy of 500, right? Not good enough, don't get me wrong, but you return home and you're still positioned with a couple weeks worth of games before the Four Nations break to make your case, to get it together. And at that point, I think, you know, maybe we see Filip Hronek right before the Four Nations break. Maybe, you buy Quinn Hughes enough time to play through this injury to the point where his game fully grinds back into gear. You get Pettersson back, let him shake off the rust. Maybe get Demko back, let him keep shaking off the rust. And then you get that Four Nations break, and on the other side of it, we'll sort of see where we're at. But yeah, I mean, I do think that sort of thing, they need to at least maintain a moderate outcome here, right? They just need moderate outcomes for the next week. And then I think we'll get into season-defining mode, or at least kick the season-defining mode down the road.
Yes,
which is what you want to do. You need to get to the Four Nations break. That'll give everyone a chance to breathe and heal, and we'll see what this team can do down the stretch. That's kind of what we're hoping for over the course of certainly the rest of January.
Man, that break is going to be so fascinating, because as you said, there's one element where everyone needs to heal and everyone needs to rest up, but there's also guys trying to shake off the rust and guys who maybe need some game action and to get up to speed and be at their best. And then you're coming out of that break, and by that point, it's only six games until the trade deadline. So it's like a really, really quick kind of final audition, final chance to make a statement to your management team and say, hey, this is what our team is. We got healthy over the break. Here we are. What do you guys want to do? It's going to be a really fascinating dynamic around the NHL to see how that changes team seasons. And of course, you've got guys going to the Four Nations who will be playing these high-pressure games.
Yeah, logging miles.
Logging minutes, potentially injuries, all of those things. So, man, it's a real wild card in the middle of the season. Before we get to Sarah Nurse here, I did want to touch on Nils Höglander. And, you know, I know we were talking about Lekkomäki earlier in the show and basically saying, like, yeah, there's flaws there. There's things he needs to improve. But his skill set is such that the Canucks probably need to keep him in the lineup right now. And I think you kind of put Nils Höglander in that boat as well. Man, it was tough because he takes that penalty. I think we're on the same page. Is it soft? Yes, but he's also being undisciplined. You can't take that penalty there. But I thought he played a really good game before that. Obviously, nice pass to set up Miller. And it's interesting. You don't usually think of Nils Höglander as a playmaker, but I thought that was a notable part of his game last night. Obviously, the assist, but there were other opportunities too where he was making really good, pretty advanced passes that we don't always see from him. And then, of course, there's the energy and all of that. And I just hope that he didn't throw it all away. He didn't waste that goodwill that was building up a little bit with Tocchet because of that penalty at the end. And look, I get it. He's taken way too many penalties. The discipline level has to be higher. But he's one of these guys who just has that extra level of offensive pop. The Canucks don't have a lot of them to move up the lineup right now, and he might have to be part of the solution, at least in the near term here.
He has to be part of the solution. They need to up his minutes, and they need him to get going. And he kind of has, or you know, in this stretch of games since Christmas. I mean, he's been put, what, he's got 3 points in five games since Christmas. His ice time has been spiking a little bit, making something of a comeback. So, yeah, I mean, look, your best chance of manufacturing scoring chances is more nils, right? Like, more nils is required at the moment. You know, there's a level of venom, or at least potential venom, that he can bring to the Canucks attack that you're not getting if Danton Heinen's logging those minutes, right? Or if Phil DiGiuseppe's logging those minutes. And right now, that's what the Canucks need. They need, you know, some offensive creativity. They need some ability to hurt their opponents. Nils Höglander hypothetically brings that. It certainly has since Christmas, even if his season on the whole hasn't been to the level that I think we'd hoped for. Certainly not since he lost his top six role. What was that, like 10 games into the season against the Carolina Hurricanes?
Yep.
So, you know, there's been like 10 good games to start the season, 5 good games punctuated with a couple of bad penalties since Christmas. So, you know, inconsistency has kind of been the name of the game. Like, there have been disappointing stretches for Höglander, but I also think there's been stretches where he reminds us what he can do. I still believe strongly in this player. I think he's a really good piece for this team going forward. And right now, like, I look, if you're going to hang around here, I don't know that the Canucks are going to be able to do it defending, right? Like, I don't know that they're going to be able to grind out 2-1 wins, especially against their upcoming competition. Like, more Nils, more Brännström, more Lekkerimäki. It's not perfect. In fact, it's far from perfect.
Very far from perfect.
But it might be their best route out here. They need to chase some ceiling.
I wonder if Pettersson's back, if we even see Höglander with Pettersson maybe on a line. That wouldn't shock me. I do think, you know, now he wasn't asked about it directly. I don't think Tocchet, the penalty from Höglander. So he didn't really have a chance to crush him or not crush him, as the case may be. But you're right. Just the fact that he's been doing the other things and rounding into form, there's always got to be accountability. I understand that you never want to just give a player a free pass, but given the circumstances for the Canucks right now, it feels like maybe you have to overlook that moment as much as it costs your team and find a way to keep his minutes up and give him an opportunity to help you win some of these games, to do whatever you can to scratch and claw for points on the remainder of this road trip against some really good teams. I mean, man, we're focusing on Washington, Carolina, Toronto, but then they got to wrap up in Winnipeg. That's an extremely, you're going up against Connor Hellebuck and the Winnipeg Jets. That's an extremely, extremely difficult game on your schedule as well. All right. It is Canucks talk here on Sportsnet 650. As I've mentioned a couple of times, so we're going to hear from Sarah Nurse here. Now, just to peel back the curtain a little bit, we connected with Sarah Nurse just before the show. Drant on the road, not able to be a part of that. So I had the pleasure, all of my own, to chat with Sarah Nurse, who, of course, is a forward with the Toronto Scepters in the PWHL. The PWHL Takeover Tour at Rogers Arena tomorrow, January 8th. It's the Scepters versus the Montreal Victoire. So you got a lot of big names in this one. Sarah Nurse for Toronto, Marie-Philippe Poulin for Montreal. Should be a really good one. I got my tickets. I'm excited to go and had the pleasure of chatting with Sarah Nurse, again, forward of the Toronto Scepters, Olympic gold medalist with the Canadian national team. Sarah, how are you?
Of course. Thank you so much. Happy to be in Vancouver.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, welcome to Vancouver. How's the West Coast treating you and your teammates so far?
It's lovely. It's so mild. We have some girls who are from the West Coast, so they're very excited to be home. But yeah, we're excited to switch up from the pace of Toronto life.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty cool thing about the Takeover Tour, right? You guys get to go to so many new cities across North America. What does that opportunity mean for you and your teammates?
It's amazing. It's something, obviously, the Takeover Tour is a little new this year with the PWHL, but it's something that we've been doing for years with the national team and kind of the pro formats before. And so we're no stranger to coming to new markets and bringing women's hockey to markets that don't necessarily get to see us as often. So we're very excited to be in Vancouver.
Yeah, and I know the reception, I'm sure, across the board was really enthusiastic, but I know here in Vancouver specifically, the tickets sold out in a hurry. And I mean, what does it mean? How does it feel to kind of get that sort of reception, that reaction, to see how excited people are to get the chance to watch women's hockey at this level?
It's really special. Anytime that we go to a new place, you never know what the response is going to be like. And so there's some nerves and some anxiousness there. But honestly, the markets out west have embraced us with open arms. And so we're very excited. We know there's a huge hockey fan base here. And so we're excited to maybe, you know, bring women's hockey here in a couple of years.
Well, I was going to ask, I mean, you led me right into my next question, right? I know that in year two now, and the league has talked about the possibility of expansion. And then we see the list of cities that are getting games on this takeover tour, and we start to think, and it's always interesting. I know for leagues that are starting out, the West Coast can be a bit of a challenge, right? Because it's so far away from where the six teams currently are. But do you see a possibility that, hey, whether it's two or three teams out West here, that maybe sooner rather than later, there could be expansion to this part of the continent?
Oh, I don't see why not. There's always been such a huge, you know, following and such a huge like passion for hockey on the West Coast. And I know coming from Toronto, we're on the plane yesterday being like, man, this is pretty far. Like we could go to Europe if we were going the other way. But no, I think it would be great, you know, hopefully having a Western conference in a couple of years, just so that we can really expand and bring our product everywhere.
And I know you're involved with the Players Association for the PWHL as well. And I mean, just have the players in general, how do they view the prospect of expansion in the near future?
I think there are mixed feelings, right? It's so exciting because thinking about expanding a league that we just started last year obviously shows how much that we've grown in the past year and how much demand there is for us around the continent, which is so, so exciting. But at the same time, as players, it is scary because you think of like an expansion draft and what that looks
right.
like. And you're settling into these new markets that you've, you know, probably just gotten into last year. And you're like, oh, I could be up and gone somewhere next year, the year after that. And so there is a little bit of mixed feelings for sure, just from the player side. But I know from a fan perspective, so many people are so excited because they want women's hockey in different markets across North America.
That's a really interesting perspective. I hadn't quite considered that, right? Because I think we often think about expansion and it's, well, hey, you know, there's more spots open and it's an opportunity mm-hmm. to grow the game and maybe more revenue, and that's good for everyone. But you're right. That's one of those things about pro sports and with expansion drafts. There is that element of uncertainty. And, you know, it's year two for the PWHL so far. Just talk a little bit about what has the experience been like to be kind of on the ground floor of a new startup sports league?
Honestly, it's been a whirlwind. You know, me and my teammates, we look and we're like, we don't know what day it is. We don't know where we are in the world. Like, we are, you know, on the go all the time. But it's honestly, it's a dream. You know, you get to wake up in the morning, go to the gym, then get on the ice. Like, we get fed. Like, we are professional athletes. And so it's something that is so special, something that we definitely don't take for granted, because we're doing something that people dream of. And so it's a lot of fun, but it's definitely a learning experience. We're all still learning.
How does this season feel different than the inaugural season?
I think the inaugural season, everybody was like flying by the seat of their pants. I think that we were all learning how to be pros, from, you know, our coaching staff to the people that work for us, to us as players. Like, we were just figuring out how to go to battle every single night, you know, 20 plus games throughout the season. This year, we kind of have a little more experience. We kind of know what to expect a little bit from a mental, physical, emotional side of the game. And so I think we're coming in with a little more experience, but yeah, I think rivalries are forming throughout the league. I think there are, you know, players to watch. I think there are certain markets that you like to go play in. And so there are little nuances about pro sports that are definitely coming in this year.
Is there anything that surprised you about the PWHL experience so far?
I think honestly, just the level of professionalism. I know before the PWHL was incepted, it was, the professionalism was the forefront. It was, you know, top of mind. And I think our ownership group, the Walter Group, Billie Jean King, everybody who works with PWHL has done an incredible job of maintaining this level of professionalism that is unified and you see across professional sports. And I know after the first year, we didn't actually know if that was going to be possible, but I think everybody in each market has done a great job of making sure the players and the staff and the fans feel like this is truly a professional event. And so when you go out and you watch, you know, a Scepters game on a Friday night, like everything from game show, game run of show, in arena, everything feels professional, like you go see a Leafs game or a Canucks game. So I think it's been really special.
In conversation with Sarah Nurse, forward for the Toronto Scepters. They're playing the Montreal Victoire tomorrow at Rogers Arena, part of the PWHL Takeover Tour. You mentioned some rivalries starting to develop. The matchup at Rogers Arena is Toronto versus Montreal. As you well know, that's a pretty significant hockey rivalry. In the NHL, is it starting to develop a little bit in the PWHL as well?
I think definitely, you know, playing against Montreal for this last year, obviously, but a couple of years prior, there's always that natural rivalry. There's girls on that team that you don't like to play against, that you want to compete against. and that you want to beat. And so I think a Toronto-Montreal matchup, I don't know if that's ever not going to be a rivalry. So it's always exciting. You always get up a little more, you know, when you're playing players like Davian, Poulin, Stacey. Yep. And so it's exciting.
I think it could be any sport, right? You know, pickleball. You slap Toronto 100%. And Montreal on there, and it's going to be a rivalry. It's going to mean a little something different.
I meet people who live in Montreal, and I'm like, oh, we have a rivalry.
One of the things I really like about this tour as well is, you know, this isn't preseason. These aren't exhibition games. These are regular season games. And, you know, this one tomorrow, it's got some stakes. Montreal is first place in the standings right now. So this is a big game for your team. What do you need to do to compete against, you know, you ran through it, Marie-Philippe Poulin, Debian and Nett, right? They've got some really talented players. What's the key for your team tomorrow?
For sure. I think over the last few games, although maybe our results haven't showed it, our team is really on an upward swing and we've really honed in on the things that we need to do to be successful. And so we've been very aggressive. We've been playing fast. We've been playing smart. We've been playing with urgency. And so we matched up pretty well against Montreal when we played them at the beginning of the season. I think we took them to overtime. And so we know that we match up well against this team. And we're very excited to play.
One storyline for your team this season, of course, the absence of Natalie Spooner, who was the MVP last year. I think everyone who's watched the PWHL, the Canadian national team, knows how talented she is. And, you know, I think even Canucks fans recently, right, we've seen the team go without Quinn Hughes for a stretch, Elias Pettersson for a stretch. I think we know how difficult it can be when you lose an elite player from your team. What's been the biggest challenge? How much of a challenge has it been with Spooner out of the lineup?
Yeah, I think it's been interesting because she hasn't been here the whole season. So realistically, we've had to create lineups and matchups without her all season. And so obviously losing her is a huge hole in the lineup, but I don't think anybody's looking to come in and replace her or what she does. I think that we're looking to play to our strengths, maybe everybody stepping up a little bit more. But I think it's going to be pretty awesome when she comes back because we've built some success without her thus far through these first like 8 games. And so when she comes back, I think it's just going to be an added layer of excitement for our team.
It's going to be like trading for the MVP, right?
For sure.
Get her back in. It's perfect. Hey, Sarah, I really appreciate you taking the time. I hope you enjoy your time in Vancouver. I know people are hyped. I'm going to be at the game tomorrow with my daughter. It's her first hockey game. So I'm really, really excited to go check it out. Thanks so much and enjoy the tour.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
That is Toronto Scepters forward, of course, member of the Canadian national team, Olympic gold medalist as well, Sarah Nurse, chatting with me a little bit earlier today ahead of the PWHL Takeover Tour. Again, her team, the Scepters, taking on the Montreal Victoire tomorrow at Rogers Arena. I believe tickets are sold out, so I'm not going to get direct you to anywhere to buy tickets, but it should be a blast when the PWHL the Vancouver leg of the Takeover Tour goes tomorrow at Rogers Arena. And obviously I asked Sarah about expansion, the possibility of expansion to Vancouver in the relatively near future for the PWHL, a hot topic, I think, for sure around the league. Jay in North Delta texts in, they need to be really careful not to overreach. Don't forget, it took the men's league 80 years to get to 12 franchises. Several of those didn't survive their markets. That's Jay in North Delta. And it's a fair point. I think you see in all startup leagues, there's a push-pull between trying to show that you're successful, capitalize on momentum, capitalize on success, expand, grow the game, grow revenues, all of that. But you also have to be so careful that you don't end up with trouble teams, with teams that can't do it financially, can't compete, whatever the case is. And as I said to Sarah, you know, the travel to the West Coast certainly does present an extra hurdle for all startup leagues, the PWHL included. I was happy, though, to hear her say basically, man, the players don't care. Hey, we got on the plane and we thought it was pretty long coming out here, but whatever. Let's expand. Let's get a Western Conference up and running. That is fantastic to hear. I hope we see it soon, and I'm glad we're getting a taste of it tomorrow at Rogers Arena. That's the show for today. Thank you for listening. Big Wednesday show as always tomorrow. Crossover, Jason Buchla, and we'll look ahead to the game against the Washington Capitals tomorrow on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.